Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Everybody's talking about lowering the temperature, tuning down the rhetoric. We've been having a debate about whether or not both sides bear equal responsibility or perhaps even disproportionate levels of responsibility for the political violence that occurred over the weekend. I don't think so. I just don't. The vast majority of political violence and assassinations that have been successful in this country has been directed at progressives and Democrats. And yes, I remember the attempted assassination attempt on President Reagan, right? Yes, I recall what happened with President Trump this past summer. I condemned it. I condemn the violence this past weekend, but I just don't think the historical record supports any kind of statement that Dems and Republicans are both equally responsible for this place that we find ourselves at. If we can think of ratcheted up political engagement on a spectrum, right? And on one end of the spectrum, it is totally disengaged. I never read any news, don't care anything about it, and I don't vote. And on the other end of the spectrum is I buy a gun and I go impersonate a cop and kill people, right? The range of what is acceptable in our country has moved closer and closer and faster towards that extreme end of political violence because of Donald Trump, in my opinion, not because of Democrats. And I think that that matters. Now, individual bad actors will do bad things. Certainly the assassin, I'm sure it's going to come out that he's had mental health issues. But when you speak in the language that Donald Trump does, for the amount of time that he has at the rhetoric level that he has, you cannot then act as if you are surprised when one of the hundreds of millions of people in this country that, yes, may have had pre-existing mental health conditions, takes your rhetoric at face value and acts upon it. I simply have not seen equivalent rhetoric from the left. Matt, then we're going to go to the phones and the text lines. 855-752-4842. Go ahead.
Yeah, there's no equivalent rhetoric, really. And one of our texters had mentioned the pardoning of the January 6th protesters, and I was reminded of that because this morning I heard Ruth Ben-Ghiat, the NYU scholar and author of Authoritarianism, said that the pardoning of the January 6th protesters gave a huge green light that political violence from the right is okay. And I think we need to understand the language that Donald Trump has been using. You read the whole list, yeah, Maggie, of what he's been saying. And then he said something just in the last 36 hours, blaming radical left Democrats and calling them enemies and all this other stuff. You know, this is the language of an authoritarian, and it does give the green light to people who may not be mentally totally, plumb to go do horrible things. And that's the rhetoric that's really dangerous right now.
Yeah, it's very shocking. Eric from Lodi says this: both sidism and whataboutism doesn't tone down anything. It hides behind a fake veneer of respectability. Being angry and outraged over people of color being renditioned by masked squads of law enforcement or thugs and calling them out is not escalation. It's an appropriate freaking response. Mary from Tulsa texting in on the AUK line. The national organization BraveAngels.org, with chapters in many states, exists to help both sides find common ground and learn civil dialogue skills. Wonderful. Luke from the south side of Chicago texting in on the AUK line. Fox reporting that a Dem assassinated a Republican before having any details is strategic. They enter the rumor into the public mindset, into the information environment, and that is enough. Then the narrative, the lie, the thing that wasn't true takes hold. People believe it. Nothing can move them off of them. That's how the escalation occurs, with lies that are intended to provoke, and they are repeated ad nauseum. nauseum. gotta agree with that one. Scott Kuchko from Shorewood reminding us, of course, that the way that we move forward is to keep the pressure on full fold with peaceful protests and showing up at the ballot box. Folks reminding us of all of those who have died from political assassination in the past at Kent State, Malcolm X, JFK, RFK, Matthew Shepard, of course. So many have died. This is time, I think, for us to put things in context. We're very happy to be joined by Dr. Howard Schwamer, political scientist, professor emeritus from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you.
Let's just take a minute here. We had estimates of somewhere in the ballpark of like 6+ million people out in the streets protesting in the No Kings rallies. This weekend, we had a bizarre, that's the only word I can come up with, army birthday celebration parade, which was bizarre. We had Senator Luis Padilla taken down by federal law enforcement and handcuffed, though released last week. We've now had political assassinations and a guy who had a hit list that was extraordinarily long. We've got the federalized National Guard, deployment of active duty Marines to LA, a president threatening to send them to other Democrat cities. Kristi Noem last week, I didn't talk about this specifically, said, "We're here to liberate the city from socialists and the burdensome leadership of this governor and mayor have placed on this country, city and state, and what they have tried to insert into the city." Professor, where are we in sort of the arc of, are we teetering on the edge of some major, even bigger political fracture? Help us understand this moment.
Yes and no. First of all, I apologize for being late. So I think it's really important. When Kristi Noem says something like that, or when, I mean, so many statements, and your last caller was just right on about the remark, I mean, even by the standards of today, the remarkable lying that was engaged in response to these assassinations in Minnesota right off the bat, Senator Lee of Utah saying, this is what, you know, something with a Marxist. This is what happens when Marxists don't get their way. In order to understand what's going on here, I think you have to recognize that none of those messages are aimed at the people they're about. Noem doesn't believe the people of Los Angeles will turn around tomorrow and say, "Oh my gosh, we hadn't realized we were being ruled by socialists. Now we realize it. Thank heavens the army is here." They're aimed at supporters in Kentucky and Alabama and West Virginia. They're aimed at the base, and they're aimed at reinforcing the base's, you know, version of reality where all the blue states are overrun, are crime-ridden hellholes, overrun by socialists, and thank goodness Trump is saving us all from them and themselves, and them from themselves. And the purpose of it is to rile up the base and keep hold of it. And the political calculation is that you can maintain control, maintain power that way. I don't think you can. And there's at least a couple of reasons. One, consistently, Trump has always overestimated his own support. Whether it was the way he describes his election as a landslide when it was not, you know, he did have the votes of 77 million Americans, but 75 million Americans voted against him. And somehow they go unremarked, you know, in this conversation. I don't think you can keep the images from bleeding through. We live in a video age, and the empty stands in Washington, D.C., and the giant crowds in cities across the country, these are visual images that get people's attention. So I think you have a situation where in really hardcore MAGA geographic areas, people are saying, well, thank heavens they're not coming. Right, you'll notice Trump announced immigration raids in blue cities and states. So, well, thank heavens they're not coming across after the workers in my state because they're good guys. They're going after the criminals in California and Michigan and Wisconsin. And it doesn't matter that's nonsense. The people in Michigan and Wisconsin and California will know that, right? But the people in the Bay States can imagine only bad guys are being targeted. But that breaks down. And that breaks down when people find their businesses suddenly without workers or people they've known for years and years being deported. And it breaks down when Trump announces things like, well, we're going to stop raiding farms because the farmers tell me they need the workers. I don't think an illusion can be maintained indefinitely. And more I'm hearing, I'm sorry to use such a loaded term, but the outright lying becoming more and more extreme. And the problem is the more for them, the more and more extreme the line becomes, the harder it is to get away with. If you say demonstrably false things and those things are demonstrated to be false, that's a problem. And in the age of the internet, you know, people in red states as well as blue states will occasionally go to the internet and say, well, what do we know about this suspect, right? And it turns out he's a strong Trump supporter, which is the case, who as a minister was a staunchly pro-life, socially very conservative figure. That contradicts the narrative. So there's sort of a hint of desperation here in the extremity of the narrative, but the explanation, I think, is that it's not aimed at the nation as a whole. It's not aimed at us. It's aimed at the base, whom Trump and his supporters believe are credulous enough to accept it. And I'm not sure that calculation will hold true for very much longer.
Let me ask you, Professor Schwaber, about the role of media. Much of the debate and discussion this afternoon has been over rhetoric and responsibility. And one of the things that before I became a member of the media, and even today, every day, I think about this. Do I say exactly what I think and exactly the way I think it? Or do I need to temper that to try to create an opportunity for others to engage with the information, right? Sure. And one of the questions, and this is put very well by one of our listeners in a text message, Professor, so I'm going to read this. Many in the media have for decades approached these issues with almost feigned or invented balance, if you will. A lot of both-siderisms is to blame here because it absolves the media from being perceived as judging one side over the other. Many in the media did this believing it was fair, believing it was the reasonable approach. But after January 6th and now pardons of January 6ers, political assassination, this is not a both sides issue and media needs to get off the fence. Your thoughts on the role of media in the moment?
Sure. Actually, I'm going to talk about three things, if I may.
Please.
So first, the media. Look, it is, you all have an extraordinarily challenging task. You want to be fair. You want to be accurate. You don't want to simply say your opinions. I mean, it depends if you cut yourself as an editorialist or a journalist, right? And those are two different roles.
Yes.
Those, the line between them gets blurred all the time. But I like to point to the Wall Street Journal, whose news coverage is absolutely outstanding, whose editorial page I often find asinine. And I think people with different views from mine can say the same thing with the New York Times. You might find the editorial page appalling, but their news reporting is first rate. And the same is true of the LA Times and any other major paper. So on the one hand, there is a question of journalistic ethics. On the other hand, being fair doesn't go to the point of allowing yourself to be a platform for falsehood. Right?
Mm. But let's take a quick pause there, Professor. We're going to come back on the other side, get to Professor Schwaber's two additional thoughts on the role of the media in this moment. We continue this great discussion when we come back. My name is Maggie Dawn. I've got Matt Rothschild with us and Professor Howard Schwaber, Professor Emeritus of Political Science from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Stick with us. We'll be back with more in just a moment.